Michael Jordan is not only the best basketball player, but he's the most exciting basketball player to ever play.
Tatum fires away, pumps it in! 51 for Jason Tatum!
The Big Three NBA Podcast is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Welcome to another edition of the Big Three NBA Podcast. I'm one of the co-hosts, H. Rob Blakely, and I am joined by the wonderful and amazingly awesome Lauren Williams of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. How are you doing today?
I'm good, as always.
As always, you're good. And the team that you covered, they're looking pretty good, at least. Well, Atlanta, they're looking good. The Celtics, they might feel differently about that. We're coming to you after the Hawks completed the back-to-back wins over the Boston Celtics in Atlanta. This week had a very playoff-like feel to it when you have a couple of games in one city and you spend time there for a week. But the outcome, I think, is I don't think I'm showing any homerism or bias when I say this was probably not what people thought would happen when the Celtics came to the ATL. But Atlanta gets not one, but two wins over the Boston Celtics and are, you know, really, they've won four in a row. And the Celtics have been kind of like Superman against almost every team they played this year. But it seems that with the Hawks, have they met their kryptonite? Because this was a really unusual back-to-back games that did not feel like it was a fluke per se. What's your takeaway from these last two games between the Hawks and the Celtics?
You know, it's hard for me to say that these two games are a fluke just because I've watched, what, at this point, 70 plus games of the Hawks this season. I think the Hawks are a team that knows how to play up to their opponents. And, you know, a little bit prior, I would say, to, you know, Wednesday night's win over the Trailblazers and Saturday's win over the Hornets, they always seem to struggle to play to the opponents. They struggled with beating opponents that they were expected to beat. You know, they struggled in Utah against the Jazz, who are one of the worst teams in the West. They gave up a double-digit lead to the Spurs on MLK Day and managed to kind of pull that game out. You know, they lost to the Wizards in one of their final meetings of the season, and the Wizards are one of the worst teams in the East. So it's hard for me to say that this is a fluke or say that they're turning a corner or anything like that. But maybe they just happen to be peaking at the right time and we're witnessing it. I think Saturday's meeting against the Bucks will be very informative about where it is that they are at this point in the season, considering everything that they've been through so far.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, lots of different players stepped up in really both of the games in Atlanta for the Hawks. The one guy that obviously stands out is DeJounte Murray. Not only did he have a career game in terms of scoring, he also delivered the game-winning shot with, what, I think 0.1 seconds left to play.
Left.
So he literally made his shot right on time to get the win. What has been, from your perspective, just what's been the key to his steady play, particularly with the absence of Trae Young?
I think the big thing with DJ or with DeJounte is that he's really thriving in having a leadership role and being kind of the QB1. Because before that, he was kind of QB A or B, depending on the night. You always have to share the ball with Trae. And as a point guard, I'm sure you know that they're a rhythm guy. I mean, point guards need to have the ball in their hands to kind of establish the tone of the game. And he's been doing that for the last 17 games with Trae out. So it'll be interesting to see how they integrate Trae back into the fold once he returns from rehabbing his injury or rehabbing from surgery. But I think DeJounte has also cultivated, I guess, a bit of a culture where there's a lot of give and take between him and his teammates, and they're really learning to trust each other in this process because there have been so many people in and out of the rotation with injuries. And it's been fun to watch just because he's been putting up some of his best basketball, not just on the offensive end, but on the defensive end as well. I mean, he had that chase down block of Jaylen Brown trying to go up for that dunk, but unfortunately for the Hawks, the rest of them didn't get back and finish out the defensive play. But I think one of the big things is that we're seeing a lot of unselfish basketball from this team. And even though DeJounte has been kind of the one that's been on the rise or sticks out nationally as having a bit of a rise right now, it's the whole team. We have a lot of, or they have a lot of people stepping up on so many different parts of the court, or at different points in the game. And DJ is one of the guys that's kind of reaping a lot of the benefits from that. And he's doing that while dealing with back injuries. So I don't know if that's a good thing, but we'll see how it plays out because backs are finicky things.
They are, and very unpredictable. Yeah. But certainly the way that he has put this team on his back, I can see why he's a little bit sore.
Yeah.
The way he's carried this team. And again, in that the game on Thursday night, he had 44 points on 18 of 44 shooting. Also had, with people they look past, he also had 7 rebounds, 7 assists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had
two steals.
Three turnovers. Yeah, and he had a couple of steals as well. Had a very
three turnovers. You're right.
Had a very balanced game in terms of impact in multiple categories. But one of the points that you touched on, and I think it's an important one, because it's one of those things that is always tricky, and that is when you have a core guy who's been out and the team starts playing better. Now, the fact that DeJounte has played well really shouldn't come as a shock to many people, because this guy was an all-star just a couple years ago. So it's not like he hasn't played at a high level for an extended period of time. But coming back at some point will be Trae Young. And when that happens, how are they going to make things work? Because we've seen them play together in stretches where they look good. We've seen them play together in stretches where they have not. And now that the team as a group is playing really well, how do you think Trae is going to reintegrate himself with these guys? Or will it be the guys kind of calibrating how they're going to play around Trae? How are they going to make this work and keep things rolling the way they are?
I think it's as simple as they're going to have to be sacrifices that someone's going to have to make. And I think one of the big things it's going to really fall on DeJounte and Trae to decide who, you know, at one point is going to be that person that might have to sacrifice a little bit more. I think as Trae kind of reintegrates into the rotation, the big thing is he has to remember is that he's been out for a while and he might not necessarily be hitting shots the way that he was in December when he had that huge streak of 30 plus points, 10 plus assists going. And December was a long time ago. He's kind of... I don't want to say struggling, but he was a little inefficient, you know, leading up to the All-Star break. And then in that one game coming out of the All-Star break against the Raptors, he was inefficient then too. And so right now, I think the sacrifice is going to have to come on his part, and he's going to have to realize that right now, you know, he might have to be QB B.5 or whatever you want to call it, and let Murray continue to kind of cook a little bit. And when it's his time, I think the game will dictate that. So I think a big thing that Quinn Snyder is really going to have to do is really manage these sort of personalities of these two guys who want to be leaders and want to take on that role of being the guy. And he's really going to have to sort of monitor that and just kind of make sure that, you know, they're both playing within the flow of the game. That's a big thing that he tends to point out, is that, you know, guys are playing within the flow of the game, and he doesn't like to necessarily manage shot selection or anything like that, but a big thing he's going to have to do is manage personalities.
Hello everyone, this is Ashraf Blakely, part of the CLNS Media Network, and I wanted to tell you about one of our friends, Prize Picks. It's the largest DFS, that's daily fantasy sports, platform in North America. It is the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You want to play alongside some of PrizePicks' favorite players like rapper Meek Mill or comedian Andrew Schultz? You can now find Community Plays under the Promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the PrizePicks community each week. PrizePicks is really simple to play. You can make your picks, submit your entries, and do this in less than 60 seconds. Yes, that's right, less than 60 seconds. PrizePicks offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday. Who doesn't love Taco Tuesday? Every Tuesday, PrizePicks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value. PrizePicks also offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account as we count down these final weeks until the NBA playoffs start. As a longtime Fantasy League player myself, PrizePicks is the perfect what's next to satisfy my Fantasy League itch. You want in too? Here's what you have to do. First, you got to go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's right, prizepicks.com/CLNS. Use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. So, that being said, you get a chance to pick more, you can pick less, it's that easy.
I want to go back a little bit to just that, really the games in Atlanta, and specifically, you know, talk a little bit about what Atlanta was able to do so successfully that a lot of teams mm-hmm. don't. For when you think back to those two games, what were one or two things that jumped out to you that Atlanta was doing that maybe most teams struggle with against the Celtics or don't do as well a job against the Celtics? What are one or two things that kind of jumped out to you in those two games?
I think the big thing that really jumped out to me is how they attacked the glass. You know, after the game on Thursday night, Quinn Snyder kind of pointed out that the Celtics out-rebounded them in that first game. And so coming into that night's game, they said that attacking the offensive glass was kind of a point of emphasis for them. And when you have a guy like Clint Capela, who, you know, it seemed he really took his matchup against Kristaps Porzingis very personally and, you know, wasn't trying to yield any bit of ground to him whenever these two guys were battling it out for a rebound. But there are moments that Capela was fighting through two or three guys to grab an offensive board, and he was getting that. I think the other thing is that this team, you know, they were really focused on out-muscling them at every point for 48 minutes. In that first game on Monday, I think, you know, we saw that first half that the Celtics were kind of the team that was a little bit more physical, and that's how they were able to build a 30-point lead. But as soon as the Hawks started to match that energy, and particularly when, you know, referees allowed them to sort of play through that contact, things kind of turned around, and I think the Celtics weren't quite ready for a team to sort of match that physicality and them not get the calls that they're used to. So I think one of the big things that stuck out to me with the Celtics in these two games is that, you know, it doesn't seem that they're quite focused on controlling the things that they can control. And part of that is the officiating. I think sometimes when I've watched the Celtics in the past, it seems that they're used to getting a certain type of whistle. And when they don't, it's like they fall out of themselves as opposed to focusing on what it is that they can do.
Yeah, they had lots of moments like that, more than usual, that you get the what I call it's the Tatum poster.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I get that call? That's one of his signature moves, unfortunately. And we haven't seen a lot of that this year, which I attribute that to the fact that they're just winning more games. And it felt as though he had turned a corner. But game on Thursday felt a little bit like a relapse moment for Tatum, where he fell back into some of those bad habits that we've seen him have and the Celtics as a team have had. I think back to that game on Thursday, the one thing, and you touched on this, the physicality. I just don't think the Celtics really met that. It felt in watching the game as if the Celtics thought, because we've got players 1, 2, 3, 4, five, six, seven playing, that talent is going to get us through this game. We don't really need to be physical because we're a better team. We're this, that, and the other. And the thing that we're constantly reminded of is that, you know, when you get to this level of basketball, they're really, you can't just show up and beat teams. Right. You got to play. That's when you see teams with, like, you know, like, I mean, the Detroit Pistons, you know, they've had a lot of downs this year. But if you don't show up to play, they're going to beat you. They've proven that this year. They haven't won a lot of games, but they've won enough games to where you can't just show up and expect the win is going to automatically fall into the box for you. And it felt as though the Celtics came into, I think, both games thinking that they were just going to cakewalk. And for the most part in the first game, they did. And it seemed like they let their foot off the gas and it just gave the Hawks just enough life to get back into it. But it's interesting to me that this is the one team that really seemed to play with a no fear of you attitude towards the Celtics. And I'm just curious, what's going to be the key to them keeping that same edge, that same swag, if you will, going forward? Because there's a lot of games they've got. Well, not a ton of games, but they've got a number of games before the playoffs begin, where obviously they're trying to build on that. What's the key from your perspective of them really kind of harnessing that energy, that vibe that they got in these last two games and building on that going forward?
Honestly, it's consistent execution and consistent focus. I think in both, I think this week has kind of been a good, not barometer, but a good mirror for the Hawks as far as kind of having two sides of the same coin, you know, playing bottom of the league teams, you know, every other night, and then the Celtics in the following game after, you know, you had them play the Hornets, they blew them out, then a Celtics team that leads the league. You play the Portland Trailblazers, bottom of the Western Conference, and then again, you're back to the Celtics. So I think, you know, when you have like a Portland Trailblazers team who has seven of their veteran players who have reputations as good players around this league sitting out, but they're playing young guys. It's kind of a similar thing that you were talking about that the Celtics need to, you know, fight through. You have to play above the level of your competition. And I think in the first quarter of the Hawks' game against the Blazers, they quite weren't ready to play a team that didn't have guys that they were used to going up to, a young, scrappy team. And it ended up with them trailing them at the end of the first. And then they kind of got it back in their head and they focused, they executed, and they played well. And so I think that's something that the Celtics will have to remind themselves of, is that they're not playing to the level of their competition. You guys have a reputation of being the best in the league, and people are going to expect that. And so for the Hawks, they kind of have to mirror that sort of thing as well, where they have to remember you can't play to the competition. There's a certain level of talent that fans have of the people on this team. And so they have to play accordingly. And I think when we've seen the Hawks fail is when they have a lot of lapses in judgment. And I think, you know, that's something that affects a lot of people. I mean, we're all human, right? But when you're playing, I think the thing is that the fact that they're still playing for something, they haven't locked up anything, so to speak. I mean, yeah, they're locked into the 10th seed, but I don't think anybody's really aiming to just be locked into the 10th seed. So they're still technically playing for something, especially as you mentioned, they have eight or nine games left, and they're still trying to get to that 7-8 spot, so they don't have to play, you know, potentially play two playing games to get into the playoffs. So they're still playing for something, and I think that's what's going to help them keep that edge down the stretch. You know, DeJounte Murray said after the game on Thursday night very emphatically that they're not tanking and that they're competing to win. And so I think that's what's going to help them keep that in mind.
Yeah, and you, the point that you make about them playing for something, and mm-hmm. certainly that's it looks that way, the way yeah. that they're playing. But the one thing you did mention, and I think it's really important to kind of just dig a little bit deeper into this, they have the potential to move mm-hmm. out of that 10th spot, just depending on how they finish the regular season, obviously how yep. some other teams ahead of them do as well. But regardless of where they finish, more I don't know if it's mathematically locked in, but mm-hmm. more likely than not, they're going to be the lower seed, whoever mm-hmm. they play. So they're mm-hmm. at some point, they're going to have to, if they're going to advance to the next round, whatever, they're going to have to win on the road. But mm-hmm. before you can even get to that point, there are the matchups. When you look at teams like Boston, you look at mm-hmm. teams like Milwaukee, you look at Cleveland, teams that more likely than not, if they're able to get through the play-in or they, you know, get up high enough where they're mm-hmm. not in play-in, they're probably going to have to play one of those three teams.
Mm-hmm.
Who do they match up best against? When Trey's back and they've got the full cast ready to roll, yeah. which of those top three teams do you think they have the best chance of knocking off if they were to see them in the first round?
I think we've seen them play really well against Milwaukee, but that was before Milwaukee had sort of figured itself out and moved on from Coach Adrian Griffin. And they haven't seen a Doc Bucks team yet. So this will be the first time for them on Saturday. So I think I might have a better idea. But yeah, if they're fully healthy team, you know, they have Trey, as you mentioned, they have right. Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu coming off of the bench. Even some of the rookie guys that would be, I mean, they're not going to have Sadiq Bey, who I think Milwaukee is a good matchup for him just because he adds size to the front court and he had been playing defense better toward the end of this season before he tore his ACL, but relatively fully healthy, I think Milwaukee would probably be a better matchup for them because we've seen what Clint is like against Giannis and Brooke Lopez, and we've seen what Jalen Johnson can do against that front court as well, because I think he and Clint kind of complement each other really well, and he also complements Onyeka Okongwu. I think the X factor, really, I think a lot of people look at Trey, and obviously he helps to power the offense, but I think really the X factor for this team right now is Jalen Johnson, just because mm-hmm. of he's a Swiss Army knife. He mm-hmm. really is. He adds size. We talk about, you know, the wingspan and the length that people have, and he has both of those things because he's standing at what, 6'9". Mm-hmm. He's shoot the ball a lot better this season, and as he's gotten into rhythm, you see that he's a lot more confident with not hesitating on shots. He still does, but you know, you forget that he's 22 because of the breakout year that he's had, but he's still very, very young. And he does it on both ends of the floor, and on defense, he plays hard. And that's something that this team needs, because when he missed those 14 games with that wrist fracture, the Hawks went 4-10 after starting the season, 6-4. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, Trey is a big part of what helps run this offense, because you cannot replace his passing ability and his ability to shred defenses with his speed. Because he, you know, DeJounte is fast, but Trey is a little bit faster and a little shiftier. Exactly. Yeah. But with Jalen out, it's a whole different, because he really affects how that defense runs. And it's been really fascinating to watch how Quinn Snyder and his staff has kind of helped keep that defensive flow without without Jalen Johnson. I mean, they've put DeAndre Hunter back in the starting lineup, and he was coming off of the bench and was thriving in that role. And then they also have Vic Krejci stepping up, a guy who's on a two-way contract who they didn't even guarantee at the end of last season, but brought back to start, and he's been playing hard. So imagine how what Vic has been able to kind of accomplish in the starting lineup, putting it on the bet or having him come off of the bench when Jalen comes back. I mean, I think that matchup just works for them a little bit better. But I do think, as we've seen, they can compete against the Celtics just as well. So I think either of those two matchups, they might make it exciting, but I still think either the Celtics or the Bucks will have the edge. There's just something about a series. They're just not quite, I don't know, ready yet, but they're getting there.
They are. I mean, and I think here's the thing about playoff series, and often we get caught up in the actual outcome. Like if a team wins a series in five games, we think, oh, that was a pretty easy series. But then you start breaking it down. A lot of those games came down to like maybe two or three possessions in the final minute. I suspect that Atlanta, if they were to see the Celtics in the first round, that it would be a series. And it may not show itself in terms of going seven games, but if it went five or six, I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe
one or two games that could have gone either way, that maybe go the Celtics way because they've got that experience advantage. But Atlanta has certainly shown itself to be a team that they're not just going to lay down and let you walk over them. And I think that's for the Celtics, that's a very humbling lesson. And I am going to try to speak it into existence that we'll be in Atlanta for the first round of the playoffs. I know the Celtics are going to be in the playoffs and the Hawks are pretty confident they're going to be at worst. They're going to be that temp seed. But I do think that they've got the potential to move up a spot or two at least. And better
I think if they
themselves.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think if, you know, they can handle business a little bit on Saturday, they face the Bulls who have the ninth seed right now on Monday, and they're one game back from them. I think that can really help their chances of obviously, you know, getting a good rhythm in the play-in. I think someone mentioned that the Hawks are undefeated in the play-in tournament since its existence. And so, I mean, they have that reputation that a lot of people didn't have them beating Miami last season, myself included, coming out of the play-in, but they handled business. So I think that, you know, whether they face Miami or Philly, if they were able to get out of that 9-10 game, I do think that they could at least handle Philly because we've seen what Trae Young is like against the 76ers in a series and they only have to worry about one game. So yeah, it'll be interesting for sure.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. And for those looking forward to reading more of Lauren's content at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, what are some of the best places, what's your Twitter and all that other fun stuff where people can check out your work?
Absolutely. My Twitter is Williams Lauren L, just because I have a very common name, a blessing and a curse.
There's a million of you out there. That's the good news.
Yes. So Williams Lauren L. And then you can also find my work on the AJC.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Lauren Williams, thank you so much for your time. And hopefully I'll be seeing you sometime next month in the playoffs.
We'll see. We'll certainly see.
All right, Lauren. Thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Sherrod.